Today, we've spent time in Hartlepool to understand more about a town that has been represented by Labour for almost six decades, but is now a top target for the Brexit Party. And, in opinion, Sonia Soda looks back at the controversies and clashes in another election week. This is Sunday dinner in Hartlepool. Our producer Josh Kelly is at his nan's house.
I'm coping. Sort of. Chucking stuff in here so we can, if we feel like eating, we can eat.
Oh, it smells amazing.
Well, I hope it will be amazing.
You know, a Brexit Party are targeting Hartlepool, aren't they?
I don't think I'm going for it.
No. You know, were you tempted?
Maybe a month or so ago, I said, you know, that is it. I'm never going to vote again. But I can't really bear not to vote. But of course, I want Brexit. So who do I vote for to get Brexit? I don't mind Boris Johnson. I think he's a bit of a character. But I didn't think he was Prime Minister material. I really didn't, Josh. But at least he's trying to do something.
When Brexit wasn't getting done, were you not tempted by Brexit?
I did say at one time, because I really like Nigel Farage. I have from the first day I ever saw him on Question Time. But I don't think he's doing the right thing by bringing in the Brexit Party, which may stop us getting Brexit. It'll split the vote. So there you are, darling, you've got my opinion.
Maureen is one of the 70% of people in Hartlepool who voted for Brexit in 2016. She's weighing up whether a vote for the Conservatives or the Brexit Party is more likely to mean we actually leave the EU. For Josh's granddad George, there's a different dilemma.
If Brexit had been that confident of getting a proper vote, they should have had Farage in charge, but he backheeled it. Why? In one word, he's a showman.
The Labour Party give us bugger all.
The Labour Party, for a start, give you a rise on your pension, they give you free bus passes, they give you a free television licence, and they give you £300 heating allowance. Conservatives have took it all back, bit by bit.
Jeremy Corbyn's party has represented Hartlepool for 55 years, including more than a decade by one of the architects of New Labour, Peter Mandelson, who was parachuted into the town.
17.5 million was a majority. Yes.
A majority. What about the other
14 million? What about this lot you're going to vote for?
The type of conversation you're hearing is probably being replayed in homes across the country, as people try to reconcile their long-held political identities with the question of Brexit, especially in towns like this. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, why has the Brexit Party made the Labour stronghold of Hartlepool its number one target seat?
Welcome to the stage, Nigel Farage.
The Brexit Party will not contest the 317 seats the Conservatives won at the last election. But
so there it is. Brexit Party leader Nigel Farage has just said he'll pull candidates from all Conservative held seats to help Boris Johnson. But he's not backing out of Labour seats, including this one, Hartlepool, where they've brought in their party chair, Richard Tice.
What do you get, Nigel? Sorry. What do you get out of this?
I don't want anything. I want Brexit. It's all I want. I don't want anything.
Can I ask your name?
Yes, you can. Alison Lilly, E-L-I-S-O-N, Lilly is L-I-L-L-E-Y. I'm just a resident of Hartlepool.
How long have you lived here?
Oh, I've been here now about 49 years, actually. I voted to come out. If it wasn't for Nigel Farage, whose voice would we have speaking for us, you know?
Who have you voted for historically?
I used to be a member of the Labour Party because I believed in, you know, fair dues for all. But Jeremy Corbyn, no way. At the European elections, I voted Brexit Party.
Is there a thing that in Hartlepool the Tories won't win, so it's a good thing for the Brexit Party to stand?
Yes. Now, that's what I was worried about, to get Brexit done, as they say, to get a Brexit candidate elected in Hartlepool. I've been a wee bit torn because should I vote Conservative, should I vote Brexit? But because we've got Richard Tice, I'm definitely going to vote for the Brexit Party in Hartlepool, because I don't think it doesn't sit comfortably with the people of Hartlepool, the majority, to vote Conservative.
This is where Peter Mandelson represented, and there's this sense that...
Don't start me off. I would not like to use any sweary words.
You've got now another millionaire from the south who probably doesn't know Hartlepool that well. Doesn't that put people off?
Well, Peter Mandelson was just dumped in, and we were used and abused by him. But I think this fellow's got more credence.
Pleased to meet you.
And lovely to meet you too.
All right. See you in a bit. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Richard Tice. Why is Hartlepool your number one target?
Because 7 out of 10 voters voted to leave here. We've already got, we've got 10 councillors in Hartlepool. So we actually run the council, we've got the leader of the council, and, you know, we know that this is, it's one of many Labour Leave seats that is furious and betrayed.
It doesn't make any difference, does it, to step aside in Tory seats? It's these sort of seats that the Tories want to win, and you could stop them winning there.
Nonsense. The Tories cannot win seats that they haven't won in over 50 to 100 years. There's over 100 seats across the country that the Tories have never won in 100 years, and they never will, and they need to wake up and realise that.
What do you know about Hartlepool? I mean, what are your connections to it? Have you been here much?
Yeah, look, well, from now on, I'm going to be here, you know, as much as possible.
Have you been here much before?
Yeah, I've been here, you know, recently a fair bit, and, you know, but of course I'm learning, of course I'm listening, but what I'm saying is that actually what voters want, they want to back someone who actually does something, someone who achieves something, who's got a track record of success.
Nigel Farage says it's not about career politicians, but as the chair of the party, haven't you parachuted into a seat you think you're most likely to win?
Well, I've been in business for 30 years, so clearly I'm not a career politician. They've had enough of people who say they're local people, who've then delivered the square root of zero.
So this is my favourite place in all of Hartlepool. It's called Seal Sand. That's the North Sea. But that's cold, sort of North Sea breeze battering us in the face, as you can probably feel. Sort of mud flats and marshes, streams everywhere sort of shining. On the left over there, that's the old steelworks, where one of my granddads used to work. And then...
Is it shut?
Yeah, that's shut down pretty much now. On the right is the ICI chemical works that used to employ 30,000 people.
And my other shut down too?
Yeah, that's where my other granddad used to work for all his life before he died. And then in between all of that is what is still the biggest petrochemical industry in Britain. You can sort of see the fire like spurting out of towers, just shooting up into the sky. This landscape was Ridley Scott's inspiration for Blade Runner.
He went
to college in
Hartlepool. For Blade Runner?
Yeah, he went to college in Hartlepool. The Northern School of Art. It's just this sort of crazy juxtaposition of like a beautiful natural environment with this sort of really impressive industrial skyline. And it sort of reminds me of the hard work that Hartlepool has been built on. And sort of still is.
Family. I mean, yeah. One granddad there, one granddad there.
Yeah. These jobs over here are good quality jobs that people still have, and we make things that contribute to the economy, and I think there's a lot of pride in that. And if, like, it's not to say that there's no problems in Hartlepool. If you sort of turn your head the other way back towards town, unemployment's one of the highest in the country. There's pockets of real deprivation, but there's basically two realities here. There's a lot of good stuff, there's a lot of potential, and there are a lot of problems, and people here want that to be recognised and understood.
We're going to what sounds like a pretty amazing community organisation. It's known as the Annex, and it's in Dyke House, which is one of the poorest parts of Hartlepool, and actually one of the most deprived parts of the country. It's run by a guy called Sasha Bedding, partly as an open house to local residents. He sees 2,000 people a year. They help with food and employment, but they do some really innovative stuff as well around training local residents to organise in the community.
Hi, all right, how are you doing, man? Josh, nice to meet you. Hiya,
how are you? Yeah, how would you like to see Hartlepool portrayed?
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, Hartlepool is a great place with some fantastic people and really kind people, and they're really friendly. But it faces systemic issues. I mean, the government talk about left behind towns and left behind places, and actually that presupposes they were ever at the same starting point. And actually they weren't. They weren't in the same race for the last four decades. And I think there's a real issue about actually what they are is an irrelevant place. And we've got communities around this country who have been irrelevant, you know, post-industrial coastal towns in the northeast of England have been nobody's priority. And actually, that's reflected in the fact there's 6 jobs for every 10 people of working age. You know, there's lots of kids growing up in really quite poor, financially poor households. A lot of love, but financially poor. And in spite of all of that, you know, people do a huge amount for each other. You know, we've got a Make Dyke House Beautiful campaign where people are planting tens of thousands of bulbs in this community. Obviously, you know, austerity hit, and it hit hard. And people have responded by digging up grass beds and putting their own bulbs in to make the place look better. But the people have a pride in where they live, and they're trying to do the best in the face of difficult circumstances to make it better than it was last week, say, and possibly because they have to.
And just tell me a bit about the political situation. I mean, why do you think this is the Brexit Party's number one target in the country?
70% of the people who voted in the referendum voted to leave. You know, the Brexit Party lead the council now, so it would be stupid politically not to try and get an MP here.
And I suppose then it's if it's because 70% of people voted leave, why do you think 70% of people voted leave?
Well, they had nothing to lose, actually. I mean, I think, and you've got to think, we were one of the first waves of universal credit, and universal credit and the imposition and the way it's implemented locally means that people have very little say in what they do. They're told how many jobs to apply for, they're told how much job search they have to do. And actually, somebody turns around and said, actually, you can take back control of your life. That's actually quite a compelling. Take back control was quite a compelling message. But, you know, if Deutsche Bank leave the City of London, do you really think people care in Hartlepool about Deutsche Bank leaving the City of London? Or, you know, European medical agencies saying we're having to go to Holland? They have been ignored for such a long time. They had nothing to lose. And, you know, politics of the last 40 or 50 years, and Hartlepool hasn't received... the same level of investment as other areas. You know, we've got Crossrail at 17 billion quid, and we've got the northeast of England still using trains which look like buses. We've got a timetable which doesn't work. But that whole lazy side of they're all racist inbred bigots is just so not true. You know, the Remain argument is based on logic. People voted to leave based on emotion. And until you give an emotional argument why you should remain in the EU, people will vote to leave. They have nothing to lose, nothing. What makes a place? So we don't have a magistrates' court. We don't have, you know, a custody suite at the police station. We don't have the civic infrastructure that you'd expect of a town of 90,000 people. We were told we were going to get a super hospital just between Stockton and Hartlepool. And inevitably, they ran down the Hartlepool hospital site to the point where, you know, it's not much more than a cottage hospital. There is no A&E. You can't give birth in Hartlepool safely. I mean, only 3 births last year. But what it means is that when a community campaigned relentlessly to save their hospital, and they were promised that they were either going to get a new one, and that doesn't happen, and that doesn't materialise. There's a palpable anger and a mistrust of all politicians. I mean, you wouldn't trust any of them.
You suggested there's quite a resentment with London in a way because of the... Well, you gave the example of Crossrail costing billions and trains around here not getting updates for years. Do you think that kind of resentment's at the heart of a lot of the things that we've seen in recent years? This kind of imbalance in the economy?
Yeah, because I think that's how it manifests itself. You know, the irrelevant class are that. They've been irrelevant and they're not now.
Because of Brexit.
I think that's possibly what was the kicker, that actually I can be relevant and I can have a vote that matters. And I mean, at our last, we had a by-election and there was a 16% turnout. For the referendum, people, we're a polling station and people coming here asking for the polling card. So the people who hadn't voted for 30 years were saying, I'm going to vote in this. And I think it was that sense of actually my vote will matter on this one.
If Labour were to get in, have a referendum, and it ended up being the case that you overturned the vote, do you think a lot of the people you see day in, day out would be extremely upset?
I think they'd probably never vote again. I mean, I've heard people say that if this happened, they will never vote again.
And the shambolic nature of it hasn't changed anyone's mind.
I mean, I've not heard anybody say they would vote differently as a result. What they've said is that you're all as bad as each other was all, you know. But I mean, it was said stronger than that, and I don't know how you can't put that genie back in the bottle without somebody somewhere being really, really, really unhappy. And I don't know how Labour. I mean, they're trying to, you know, the membership want to remain, and I get that. Lots of their voters historically are in Leave areas. I don't know whether Brexit is the single most important thing in people's lives, and this election will test that.
That's so interesting what Sasha said at the end about whether the election is all about Brexit or local services, because it does really chime with quite a lot of what we've heard today, including from that guy Tim earlier, who really, really wants to leave the EU, but also had that shocking personal story about the hospital.
Well, truly, I had a heart attack and I got myself to the hospital. And I looked all over that hospital in Hartlepool to find someone. Anyway, eventually I found somebody. I said, where's your reception? He said, oh, we haven't got one. He said, can I help you? I said, yeah, I'm having an heart attack. And she started laughing, seriously. Then I said, no, seriously, I'm having an heart attack. And they had to phone me an ambulance from the hospital to take me through to Middlesbrough.
Has it gone completely?
No, it's still there, but there's nothing in there. Absolutely nothing in Hartlepool Hospital. They close the A&E, but it's everything. There's hardly anybody on the wards. There's no doctors. I say, like, I'm basically dying there with a heart attack and nobody at all. Even in the corridors, nowhere.
Oh, hi, your aunt, it's Josh.
Hi,
mate, you alright?
Not too bad.
We're just driving towards the fence now. Is that where you're still campaigning, in the fence? Or?
Yeah, we're just in fence. Probably the main.
Everything we've heard feeds into this being a really, really fiercely fought election. I mean, we know how hard the Brexit Party are going after Hartlepool. The Tories still think they've got a chance here, and yet Labour's held this seat continuously for 60 years. It'll be interesting to hear what the Labour activists on the doorstep with a local candidate, Mike Hill, are coming up against.
Right, where are we? Where are we now? Where are we going? We're in the fens.
We're in the fens, yeah.
All right.
Have you ever been chased by a dog?
Bitten, never chased.
I've been bitten?
Yeah. Usually delivering leaflets, though, in fairness.
Oh, my God.
Hello, sir. I'm Jonathan. I'm here with Mike Hill, your Labour candidate for the general election.
Sorry, mate. I'm not the house owner. The house owner isn't it?
Oh, no worries. Can I leave that for him, though?
Yeah, no
worries. Thanks very much. Appreciate your time. Cheers.
Can you just tell us about how you're feeling? I mean, like, you know, it's pretty dark, even though it's not that late. I'll be honest. I mean, I am a northerner, but my feet are freezing. In fact, I reckon about 4 out of 5 toes on either side, totally numb. Just describe what it's like going out for a winter election.
To be honest, I think it's actually wrong to have a general election in December. It's like it's a kind of form of voter suppression. I mean, you think about the cold, if you've worked hard, if you're, you know, relying on public transport, are you more or less likely to go out when it's dark and freezing cold?
Have you been canvassing a lot?
I've been canvassing a lot, yes, every night. I've got more layers than a Swiss roll on here, I'm telling you.
Do you mind if we listen in?
No, I don't mind at all. I'd love for Mr. Tice to come and visit this. I'm sure he went to school with me in Hartlepool. I think he's a big Hartlepool lad, isn't he, really? Yeah. It's absolutely ridiculous, to be honest. We're just a useful tool for them, really. That's all it is. I think the last time I had the Labour Party here was in the council elections, right. And I spoke then about poor leadership in the local Labour council. I think really the next thing you've got to do is get rid of your poor leader at national level, because I think if we had anyone with any sort of public standing and ability to lead, we'd be hammering the Conservatives and we'd 10% behind, you know, have 10 points behind. It's just, if you had someone like Keir Starmer or somewhere like that who's got that, he's just got that, he feels like a leader. Unfortunately, Jeremy doesn't. And he's a great MP and he's a great politician. I don't think he's a leader.
What do you think of Boris Johnson?
You know, the useful tool. I think he's the other one in the toolkit, but he's a clever tool. That's it. I mean, he can lay a wreath upside down and people, hey, good old Boris. What a laugh. The fact that everybody calls him Boris.
We don't.
No, I know what I call him. But
Johnson.
Yeah, he is. Or something of that sort.
We lost you. We've been lost for about 15 minutes.
Ah, sorry, mate.
It's all right.
Lost loads of volunteers like that. We end up standing for the Liberals a few years later when we finally dug them out.
Every
man for himself. 129 Osborne and Partridge. 127 Tyler. Ron, if you want to do that.
So, Ant Frayne, you're the Secretary of the Constituency Labour Party. Is Jeremy a positive or a negative on the doorstep?
I won't, in Hartlepool, it's not particularly great. I won't pretend he is. You get people who love him, and it's that weird mix, because I think what he's done is he's played a massive part in re-engaging the party. So the reason why we've got so many volunteers out, the reason why the party's doing so well is because of Jeremy, but not just Jeremy, the internal democracy of the party. People have, you know, been drawn in by the idea that you can have some control and you can make a difference. And without Jeremy and without the internal democracy, that wouldn't be there. But at the same time, for whatever reason, and I don't remotely blame Jeremy himself or the people around him, but whether it's the media, whether it's the message, whether it is that kind of London-centric southern feel that a lot of the things in the party has around them now, it does get people's backs up, and that's the harsh reality of it. And a lot of the things that happened at conference and a lot of the things that we say and do, I feel like we could just think a little bit more about how it does impact these heartlands here.
Like what?
The fairly radical things like the 4-day working week, we need to put more work into those before we start declaring them as a policy. You know, when you're in the Heartlands here where people are working long industrial hours in shutdowns and jobs, they just see that as a cut to their wages as opposed to a change and a difference.
And how much of an issue is Brexit? How much does it come up on these doorsteps?
It's a massive issue online. We get the kind of a narrative driven from there, and then people pick it up on Facebook and social media. When you actually knock on people's doors, it's maybe 1 in 5 doors, 1 in 6. And it's just trying to get to the core of them. Why Brexit then? Why is that an answer? Because, you know, it's not a thing in and of itself what direct difference is going to make to your life. So why is it that you've gone to Brexit? And what is it that we can do that can maybe take away that anger? And it comes back to NHS and education spending, crime and policing, police cuts. I mean, Cleveland police have lost 550-odd officers.
Do you think... So Brexit Party basically say Tories can't win here. Is that true?
I don't know, because we need to see how the Labour, where those Labour Leave voters go, whether we can stick with our core message and get through to them, or whether they see kind of the ERG and the Boris Johnson message as the direction and the way forward, or whether they see the Brexit Party as the way forward. I think it's more likely that they'll see the Brexit Party. But you've got 13,500 Conservatives in this town, so the Brexit Party's real fight is to try and get those Tory voters. And I'm not sure if a Tory vote will shift.
So it's good news for you then that Richard Tice is standing, because it splits the Leave vote.
I'd like to think so, but with Richard Tice coming in with a, you know, all of the resources of the Brexit Party being chairman is the highest profile candidate they've got, and all of the media attention, that will win over, I think, some Labour votes, and it's whether we can keep that 7,500 majority, if we can keep enough of it to hold on here.
If it is about Brexit, does it make it very difficult for Labour in places like Hartlepool?
If this is purely a Brexit campaign, then we are on the defensive and fighting. You know, if the narrative shifts, then Brexit Party have nothing.
What do you think we've learned from all of this, Anushka?
I think sometimes you come to a place and you just want to come away with an easy answer, and the reality is way more complicated than that. Hartlepool is a real place. It's true, there was a large majority that voted for Brexit, but there's so much more going on. I mean, we heard as much about the local hospital and what's happened to that as we did about the question of the EU. And I think in some ways, one thing you can say is that the way in which this election's framed in a place like Hartlepool will be incredibly important. Everyone said that. Sasha at the community centre said that. The voters we spoke to said that. The Labour Party said that. If this is a Brexit election, then clearly that is going to pile pressure on the Labour Party in a place that voted overwhelmingly to leave. The biggest thing I kind of take away is that for all the talk of apathy across the country, we didn't hear any of that here from everyone we talked to. Either we heard an incredibly passionate take on the idea that people made a democratic statement in 2016 and they would be furious if that was taken away from them, or people who were really, really upset about what has happened to local services and really want to see politicians make a difference to that. I think there is a difference between feeling frustrated with politics and not caring about it.
Reporters from across The Guardian are covering this election, including all our specialists and our Westminster team. Do follow them at theguardian.com. Coming up, Sonia Soda on an election week that's caught both Labour and the Conservatives on the back foot. Now, it's not just the Brexit Party's decision announced in Hartlepool that has dominated this week. There have also been controversies about spending announcements and the political response to flooding in Yorkshire and Derbyshire. We hear from The Guardian and Observer's Sonia Soda.
So there have been a couple of things that the Conservatives won't have been planning for to happen this week, but which have really affected their campaign. The first of these is the floods that we've seen in some parts of the north of England, particularly in Derbyshire and Yorkshire. It took the Prime Minister 6 days to get to Yorkshire after the floods happened and speak to local residents, speak to local businesses. You know, even though we saw thousands of people evacuated from their homes, people's livelihoods really affected, 6 days. And I think there's a lot of anger and resentment locally, actually, that it took the Prime Minister that long. And Jeremy Corbyn, when he was up there visiting with Ed Miliband, who's one of the local MPs, he sort of made the point, which was, if these floods had happened in the south, would the response have been so sluggish from the Prime Minister? And I think that will have chimed with some voters in Yorkshire.
Took your time, Boris, haven't you?
Yeah. Where you been?
We've been on it round the clock. Is there anything in particular that you'd like us to do to...
No, thank you.
No?
No.
You've got everything you need.
All right.
The second bit of unexpected, and let's face it, very unwelcome news in Tory campaign headquarters this week will have been the new NHS waiting list figures that were out on Thursday. And these figures show that waiting times in the NHS are some of the worst that they've ever been. And they, I think, are going to be a real problem for the Conservatives in this campaign. In terms of the week that Labour's had, there was some confusion around Labour's policy on a Scottish independence referendum. So at first, Jeremy Corbyn said that there would be no Scottish independence referendum during the first term of a Labour government, so essentially during 5 years. But later that day, he rode back on it and said there wouldn't be a Scottish independence referendum for the first 2 years of a Labour government. So Labour have had a week where there have been some question marks about what their policy actually is. We've also seen the Conservative Party put out a number of claims about Labour's spending plans, what Labour's plans would mean for immigration numbers, that actually, when you look at the detail, just simply aren't grounded in reality. So we saw a dossier go out at the weekend saying Labour spending plans would amount to £1.2 trillion a year. Actually, a lot of the assumptions that are used to generate that figure just simply aren't Labour policy. On Thursday, we had Priti Patel say that Labour's immigration plans mean that we could see net immigration go up to over 800,000 a year. Again, none of the assumptions on which it was based at is actually formally Labour policy. And I think that presents a real challenge to the Labour Party. We've now got a Conservative Party who really essentially are putting fake news out there, figures that aren't grounded in any realistic assumptions about what Labour policy is. I think it relates very much to the strategy we saw used by the Leave campaign back in the 2016 referendum. And I think that's very difficult actually for the Labour Party to hit back against, because as soon as those figures get reported by the press, and I think some sections of the press are reporting them without giving them the scrutiny they require, that number's out there and it becomes very difficult to unpick and disentangle. There's no question that what's going on will affect what some voters decide to do on election day, but I think it's important not to overplay, you know, the significance of every twist and turn 4 weeks out of a general election. I think what's more important is the extent to which what's going on now kind of contributes to the general sense that voters have about a party and what they stand for.
That was Sonia Soda. My thanks to her and to everyone we spoke to in Hartlepool, including voters, activists, politicians, Sasha Bedding from the Wharton Trust, and of course, Josh's family. This episode was produced by Josh Kelly and Courtney Youssef. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. Have a lovely weekend, and we'll be back on Monday.